Hey Tom, it's Laura and Dawn. You are officially on the speakerphone. Okay, we're just about ready to get started.
All right, let me call the meeting to order. Thank you all for being here. Y'all found a place to park?
The concrete cutting was waiting till you started.
Oh, yeah.
That was my cue. We do have quorum. Todd Bingham called and said he's on his way. Tom Ward's participating by telephone. Jeff Richards is planning to attend. You're not here yet, Jeff, are you? Spoke with him last night. And so we do have a quorum. You all received an agenda. I'd entertain a motion, and I heard no comments or changes to that agenda. I'll entertain a motion to approve it.
So moved.
Thank you, Jeff.
Second by Leland.
Thank you, Leland. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Any abstentions? Unanimous. You also received the meeting notes of our meeting of May 16. I received no corrections or additions to those, so I'll entertain a motion to approve those meeting notes.
Approved.
Thank you, Dan. Second?
Second.
Carlton? Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Any abstentions? It's unanimous. You'll note on those meeting notes that there was a list of council member attendees, but not of other attendees. For some reason, the roster or the roll didn't get all the way around the room, and we didn't want to do a partial listing. I announced last time, please do not leave this room until your name is on that roll. And apparently it didn't work, so I'll announce it again. Please do not leave this room until your name is on that roll, okay?
You can lock the door.
Yeah. I'm not sure
it's legal to push the
door. We thank Davis County for hosting us again. We appreciate that very much. Okay, let's start with updates and reports. As you know, the Great Salt Lake Technical Team is the technical advisor to the Advisory Council. And so in order to be consistent with that responsibility, we have in the last few meetings included some very brief technical reports from the technical team, and we'd asked Jake Vonderman, but he got called away last minute, so Jody's last minute substitute, to give us a brief summary of one report at the technical team level. And then we'll call Laura Vernon to review the outcome of the GSL research grants. Thank you, Jody. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Nice to be back. I haven't been here in a long time. I'll be reporting out on a research grant that was funded by Forestry Fire State Lands and USGS. With AGRC guidance. It's for a LIDAR project. LIDAR stands for light detection and ranging, and it is a high resolution mapping, and you can do it to 1 meter resolution, which is really amazing. It was flown to map the exposed lake bed of Great Salt Lake as well as upland and major tributaries. The objective is to understand the extent and volume and various lake levels impacts to the exposed lake bed and wetlands and phragmites mapping. It is completed and the person, Eric, I think his name is, will be reporting out to the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council soon.
No, Buck Ehler presented information to the Great Salt Lake technical team. So our IT person, Buck, if anyone has any interest in using this LIDAR data, they can contact Buck or contact me and I will get you in contact with Buck.
That's all I have.
Thank you. Any questions to Joey? Laura, you're on.
All right. So for the FY19 tech team grants, as you know, each year we get $200,000 of funding out of the restricted fund to do research grants on the Great Salt Lake. We call for hot topics in the spring of each year, and then in the summer people put together their applications and we rank them and then fund as many as we can with the $200,000. This year we only had 8 proposals, which is a little bit lower. It seems like most years we get 12, 16 proposals, so the reviewers got off light this year. So the total amount of requested funds was also very low. It was only $239,000. So we did have to scratch a few of those, but I will go over the ones that were awarded. I'll go in order of rank of how we ranked them. The first ranked project was Karin Kettering's Phragmites research, and the title is Techniques for Successful Revegetation Plants in Great Salt Lake Wetlands to Prevent Phragmites Reinvasion and Restore Avian Habitat. And that was for $50,000. And this has been a multi-year grant, and what we were able to do this year and we have done in past years is use some of our Sovereign Lands Phragmites treatment or weed treatment money to fund this project. And so we always want to make sure it ranks high, but because it's so specific to invasive species and Phragmites, we have been able to use other funds for that so we can get more research grant projects in. So the second ranked project was Mr. Angeroff's over there, and the title is Monitoring and Computation of Salt Loading to Great Salt Lake from Major Riverine Inputs for Water Year 2019. And he requested $36,500. Grant number 3 is Wayne Wurtzbos. This is actually a second year of a 2-year request, and it kind of goes to the benthic invertebrates hot topic and wetlands of last year, but it's the impacts of eutrophication on benthic invertebrate and fish prey of birds in Farmington and Bear River Bays of GSL. And Wayne will be giving a brief presentation and an update about this next week at the Great Salt Lake Tech Team meeting, if you're interested. Number 4, Mr. Bill Johnson from the University of Utah. His project is called the Hydrodynamic and Chemodynamic Frameworks to Understand the Future Trajectories of Trace Element Concentrations in Water, Sediment, and the Ecosystem of the Great Salt Lake. That was a $57,000 request. Number 5, we had a tie, actually. There were 2 4s. Janice Brainy from USU, she had an air quality project that we awarded, and it was quantifying Farmington Bay dust composition from source to sink. So a little different look at some of the air quality research that we've had going on in recent years. The 5th grant we funded was Tricia Atwoods, also from USU. It's the water quality and wetlands hot topic, and it's mapping wetlands and habitat and ecosystem functions in the Great Salt Lake, and that was for about $40,000. So those are the projects that we will be, that will be researched this year.
Thank you. Any questions of Laura? Yes, Brian.
This actually, it does pertain to the LIDAR instead. Is Buck intending to make a presentation or somebody to this group in the near future? This LIDAR data is extremely powerful, brand new, and many folks, if you don't know what LIDAR is, you'll be impressed with this kind of data, and Buck can help folks understand how it can be used. So maybe it's a recommendation to the chair to include him on a future agenda if that hasn't been talked about.
Yeah, if the council's interested, he would be happy to present. So.
Any comments from the council?
Interested.
I just have a question about the studies.
Let the councilors come up first, maybe.
Yeah, I would be interested to hear about it. I mean, we've done work before on LIDAR, but I think it's really has a lot of potential.
Yeah. Have I any questions?
Dave, go ahead.
Sorry, I just had a question on the timing for all of these. So these are 1-year grants. Is it expected that the studies will be completed in 1 year? Or
it's a good question. They cannot bill for project. They cannot bill us for project work completed after June 30th. However, we realize that sometimes all the data hasn't been analyzed and the final report can't be completed. And so if researchers can't get the reports to us by the end of the fiscal year, FY19, they just need to let me know when they will be coming in. And so it's usually a month or two, maybe 3 months later. So not always at the exact end of the fiscal year.
Yeah. How does the LIDAR is just determining the elevations of the Great Salt Lake, mm-hmm. right? How does that differ from the bathymetric study that was done a few years ago? Is this, it trimming that up? Or?
It is only exposed lake bed. I think the bathymetry looks at the bed underwater, and LIDAR can't do that. So unfortunately, it's only now that the lake is so low, it's actually really good because you have a lot of lake level elevation information, but not the part that's submerged. So.
So these studies, present and past, are they listed on the website or some answer? Do we have access to those?
Yep, they're on the Great Salt Lake Tech Team website, and you can go there and look, and it will have the awarded projects, and then we try and post the completed projects on there. If you see one that the project should be completed, meaning it was, you know, past FY17 or something, and it's not there, give me a holler and I'll just get the report to you. But.
In the spring 2018 Friends of Great Salt Lake newsletter, which is available in a PDF online, there's an article about the LIDAR technology and a presentation during the legislative session during the Maps on the Hill opportunity about a LIDAR presentation. So that would kind of provide a, you know, kindergarten version of understanding.
Designed for me.
Me too.
Other comments or questions? So what's the sense that, are you interested in putting it on our list of future meeting topics? Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Jody and Laura. Okay, the next item on our agenda, report developing a new state water plan. Last week I sent you a link. In 2001, the Division of Water Resources developed this plan, and they're now going to have launched an effort to develop an updated plan or a new plan. Candace Hostenjager, who's the Assistant Director of the Planning Branch of the Division of Water Resources, is responsible for this process, so we invited her to come and talk to her about it. Candace, fire away.
If I hit you, if I start wandering, let me know. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited to be here. And I appreciate the invite from Don to talk about my new role in overseeing the state water plan. So the Division of Water Resources, our mission is to plan, conserve, protect, and develop. We will get into what a state water plan is, what we think it is, how it will be different. But before we do that, I wanted to explore state water planning with you all. How many of you have read a state water plan before? Any plan? Wow, this is an informed group. I was like, maybe a few. That's awesome. So for those of you who have read one or would like to read one, what did you like in the plan? What did you not like in the plan? What would you think should be in the plan? It's a big question, right? And I'm just like dropping this bomb to you, Don.
Well, the obvious answer is more Great Salt Lake. I think there are five references to Great Salt Lake in there. The longest is a two paragraph on page 57. That's just a brief summary. The rest of them are just anecdotal. It deserves its own full chapter.
Yeah.
And there's references in every other chapter.
Don, could you repeat that? In the existing state water plan, there are four or five references to Great Salt Lake?
Yeah. Page 9, page 24.
Fall out of my chair.
I agree. I totally agree. It's part of the reason.
You're surprised there are so many or so few.
You're like, oh, Lord, there.
You know, in my opinion, the water plan should specifically address how you're going to reach conservation goals that were part of the governor's water proposal. I mean, you know, we talk about conservation, we talk about all sorts of nary fairy ideas about how to get there, but nothing very concrete. And so, you know, there needs to be a concrete mechanism to show how that's going to be achieved, whether it's going to be all voluntary, whether it's going to be regulatory requirements, because honestly, we talk about it, but you know, when you talk to the large water entities, they have historically cheerleaded with the conservation, but they're always conflicted because conservation means less revenue. Mm-hmm. They're constrained by operations that have a very high fixed cost. So for them to be the cheerleaders for revenue or for conservation, this doesn't work very well. Yeah. And so there needs to be a much more resounding way of doing that at a state level.
Or funding water, right?
What?
Or funding water, how we fund water. It's not just based on volume of water cells. More of that's included.
But not only just funding water, but funding how you bring about conservation. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there are some who believe if we bring the true price of water, that alone will drive conservation. I don't believe that's a very accurate statement. From having been on a major water board for 12 years, I don't believe that it will. But because that component is just not enough to drive the price of climate. So there needs to be more concrete steps defined in there to bring about conservation. Have I said that enough?
Yeah.
Candace, I'm writing too.
Okay, awesome. I am jotting notes down, and this is not the only, I just want to be clear, this isn't the only chance that you'll have to give input into this plan. I just thought it would be a good way to talk, to start the conversation about state water planning. I saw Lynn.
Hey.
Okay, let's go David, and then Lynn, and then Tim.
I think it would be helpful to have a plan based on scenario choices. Some of the way Envision Utah does its community-based planning. You know, this is what the future will look like with no planning. This is what it looked like with cluster development, et cetera. So analogous thing is, this is what our state will look like in 50 years with no plan, existing growth. Maybe the fourth choice with maximum conservation with a mix of uses. And along those lines, it should be to take use of some of the tools that exist, like the integrated water resource management, the Great Salt Lake, some of the modeling tools that are out there.
That's great, thank you. And then Lynn, and then Tim.
Just to kind of piggyback on, you know, the idea of using some of that information that was in the state, the recommended state water strategy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's so rich with possibilities that, changing or working on behaviors with conservation is a big part of what we need to do. But there are so many other aspects that we identified that would be useful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sam.
So I'm going to paint with too broad a brush here, but the current state water plan feels rather sort of passive and descriptive, mm-hmm. a little bit backward looking. Whereas I think, you know, for a plan to be a plan, right, it has to be more proactive and forward looking. I mean, there are elements that are mixed in, but that's just sort of a broad.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, thank you. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
So I'm asking for what Todd Adamson. How come it takes 40 to 50 years to take the property that the farmers sold to get off the water records?
That is a fabulous question.
Because the farms that I've seen in Magnet have been sold, are now shopping malls, grocery stores, parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you hope?
Yeah, I mean.
Tim has an answer to that.
Oh, good.
Well, just the function of the adjudication process and how slow it is. There's been a lot of efforts to accelerate that process, but that's largely what it is. And that's why we've got so many paper water rights out there. Until somebody goes through systematically and puts those claims out there, it's really hard for water resources.
Well, and that's water rights.
Well,
I'll just say, I mean, water rights, the Division of Water Rights handles all of that with the state engineer's office. But I totally agree, you know, making sure adjudication happens timely. They are working on it, but I totally agree. It happen, needs to happen quicker. So, and I've got that down.
Well, at least 20 or 30.
If we can cut it in half, you know, we're doing better. Right? Well, great. Well, I really appreciate that. And like I said, this will not be the only time that you guys have opportunity to comment, but I thought it was a great way to start some of the conversation. And so this is kind of a draft purpose. So you guys are my guinea pigs in trying to determine if you like it or not, and if you don't, tell me about it. But to provide, and we'll just read it for a second, provide a comprehensive evaluation of Utah's water resources, a summary of the challenges and actions to address them. So that's a lot of work in one sentence, and a lot goes into that, but I was trying to be concise. So that's kind of the overall broad brush picture. But like I said, you can also give me feedback on that. And it's kind of turned out. So who likes TED Talks in here?
I do.
So there's this great TED Talk by Raymond Tang, and you guys are like, what does this have to do with state water planning? I'll tie it in. And he kind of talks about the philosophy of water and what would water do. And he thinks that he learned three lessons from water, one being humility, harmony, and openness. So humility is water, you know, is always at reaching the lowest point, but it supports everything. It supports all of life, vegetation, growth, us, you know, aquatic life, birds, the whole world, right? It seeks harmony. If the water hits a rock, it rolls around it. It doesn't, I mean, okay, eventually each water will keep beating at it, but it'll roll around it. And then it seeks openness. It's looking for change, and it doesn't look for change, but it's open to change. It goes from ice to solid, solid being ice and gas and water, and liquid. So we've got phase changes in there. But so how, I thought this was a great way to tie into how I, and this is kind of my vision. So I'm just, maybe I still probably need to talk to my director about this, but this is kind of how I see the plan kind of going. Is, you know, in being humble with our state water plan, we're open to ask questions, to get input at the beginning. We are open to ask substantive experts if we don't know all of the answers, that that we can be humble in that regard, like water. We seek harmony. We're trying to, we've developed a diverse group of stakeholder, an advisory committee to participate in the plan and developing and leading it and kind of guiding the overall themes of it. And we'll go through that list next. And then an openness, that we can be open to change, that we don't have to do the same plan that we've always done. So there's that for you, and I can send out the link to that TED Talk if you guys want. So this is just the summary of our State Water Plan Advisory Committee. We have had one meeting so far. So it has their name, and not their title, but more of who we envision them representing. And yeah, so give you guys a minute to look that over. And Laura, just a question. Can I post this presentation or get it out? Can we send out a mail just in case if anyone is interested in that? I don't
sure.
know
Sure, would you like it distributed to the council and the people in this room?
Yeah,
or?
I think that would be great. If you want to do it by interest. I don't know how it typically works. So any questions on that? Just go ahead.
I'm just curious, did you just say, you know, it would be nice to have this kind of representation. Let's approach these people and see if they're interested. And sounds like a nice number and diversity of interest.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Have they all already agreed?
Yep.
That is the committee.
Yeah, the only thing, Shirley Silversmith was not at our first meeting. She sent James Toledo. So I'm not quite sure whether it'll be Shirley or James that attends the rest of the meeting.
I just have a question. Is there any industry folks on there? I don't know what NGO is.
Non-government agent organization. Thank you. No, and we actually did have that discussion at our first meeting.
Didn't do well for us, did it?
Well, there was a question of, you know, if it's challenging in the sense that when you're trying to get a diverse group, if you try to include everyone, it gets really big. And so how
should we stop to have that? The users on there for what it's worth? Because your agricultural representative is a governmental agency as well.
If you have them, you have to have the duck hunters though too. Where do you stop, I guess?
And that's, to be honest, what we struggled with.
This is not statutorily created.
No.
This is just a group that your office put together.
Well, we tried to pick representation and then people to go. Those are people being willing to do it. So it is not.
Well, there's people in the industry, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, that would be interested in doing
that.
You've got the agriculture act, you've got the extraction metal people, and then there's minerals.
I know this is asked before, but I wanted to maybe go back to it. So how does this dovetail with or maybe duplicate the Utah feature, the governor's initiative?
Can I?
Tim and Tate Flint and Warren Peterson, and it was been 2 years. Are we doing this again, or?
Can I?
Hold that
let
thought.
Me, I think I'll answer your question. Okay. We get through this. So, industry ag users and duck hunters.
For that matter, more conservation interests and more city people, and
and then I hope you can see our challenge. Okay, kind of overall how we envision them interacting in the process and being kind of leading the state water plan. Because we started with a values discussion, and I'll go over the questions, some of the questions we asked at our first meeting. So I'm gonna kind of repeat the next slide a little bit, but a lot of what came out of the first meeting is, let's not reduplicate efforts, right? Going back to Dave's comment and Lynn's, is there's already been a lot of work being done, so how do we incorporate that? The review of water use and supply data, helping us to develop future water demand scenarios, going back to what David said, recommend management practices, and really kind of tying into what Tim said is we really want this plan to be actionable. And I understand the challenges with making a plan actionable from the Division of Water Resources perspective, because we don't have the authority, I'm going to put the pen down so I don't keep waving it around. We don't have the authority to say, you must do this. So in general, for good, for bad, for ugly, whatever, we've always kind of had more of an informational plan with pretty soft recommendations in it, and there wasn't a lot of action behind it. But we're looking to change that and see how we can. So from that first meeting, which was May 31st, and we're working on technically that we don't have to do the public meeting notices and all that, but we're going to start just so we don't really have anything to hide, and we would like them to be open and transparent as possible. So we'll post the first meeting agenda, minutes, and participants on the plan or on the open meeting website. These are some of our discussion questions from the first meeting. What would you like in the plan? What would you like your friends to see in the plan? Kind of values, strategies, recommendations. So those are all encapsulated in that first part, that first meeting. And Don, I hope I don't go on too long. I'll try to get things moving.
Another 5 minutes, maybe?
Okay,
7 minutes.
Sounds good. I'll cruise then. So there's been big happenings with water, as been mentioned, right? You know, we've had the Gang of Six in 2013. We have Your Utah, Your Future. We've had the recommended water strategy. We've had an audit with the Division of Water Resources, a legislative audit. We've had a follow-up audit. We've had a third-party review. So there's been a lot going on, and we hope that these will all be included, and that advisory committee will help us in how to include these and as well as defining actions. There's a lot of data that goes into a state water plan. So the MNI 2015 water use data that was just published, our estimates for agricultural water use scenario, water demand projections, you know, a range of population projections and supply estimates will all go into the plan. And I could spend tons of time on each of those, so we're gonna just go with that. There's a lot of detail that goes into it. There are a couple of highlights I did want to talk about. So we've spent the last two and a half years developing a new water demand model. So pretty much it does what David wanted. You got your wish. We've spent the last 2.5 years, you know, that we can do a bunch of different scenario-based planning. So we can use the population projections from the Kempsey-Gardner Policy Institute. Water use is calculated based on use category, what's the lot size, what's the green space, how, what's the ET, the evapotranspiration, what's the housing type in the water supplier boundary. So this is all down to the water supplier boundary, and then it can be aggregated up to county, basin, and statewide estimates. So then we can do that scenario. That we've done all the work to do those scenario planning. So we can do the range of populations, we can estimate climate change, we can have the effects of conservation, how much is kind of naturally occurring just with our changing landscape and housing types, and what more can we do? We also have, with the release of our 2015 M&I water use data, we have a new open water data portal. So we're started, it's just loaded right now with the 2015 data, but we will continually add data to that portal. It's on our homepage of our website, which is also being updated, but yeah, so you can have access to that, you can explore the data, you can do a data dump, get it all. I mean, as much as we like to talk to you, you don't have to go to us looking for data, is our goal, is that it's just available if you want it. So, one of my questions, what about the Great Salt Lake? Especially, I think about it a lot, and I think about a lot in regards to the state water plan. And so when I'm kind of a geek, and when I was trying to, I took a picture of my whiteboard for you and planning out this presentation, and I was thinking, what about the Great Salt Lake? Because it ties in to all of it, right? I couldn't find a place to put, oh, Great Salt Lake right here. That's the place in my presentation or the state water plan that it should go. You know, this is the state of Utah plan, which the Great Salt Lake doesn't encompass all of it, but it's a huge component of it. And how do we tie that in? The answer to your question, I'm not sure exactly what that's gonna look like, but it will be different and hopefully better than it was before. So how can you influence the plan? So there's the online survey, which actually after our first advisory council meeting, we are in the process of redrafting it because we found we had kind of taken the outline of what we've always done and said, is it good, is it bad, should we change it, should be different. And after the first meeting, we found, wow, this plan may be really different than what it was before. So this survey may not reflect that. We'll still keep the comments that people have submitted, but we are redrafting it. That is why I'm filling up here. We have our advisory committee. There's comments. We'll have a draft review that goes out, and you can comment on the draft, public open houses and those type of things, which we've done in the past as well. So everyone always asks me, timeline, when will this be done? And to be honest, we had this great vision to have it done at the end of this year. Which, we are kind of up in the night, I'll take that criticism. yes, but in addition to that, so with the Kempsey-Gardner Policy Institute did all of their population projections, but they only took them down to the county level, right? And for our water, not only our water demand modeling, all of the efforts we're going through, we have to have a finer resolution. So we are working with UDOT and the MPOs to get them broken down to TAS layer. And I was told they were going to be out in June, and I just got an email the beginning of this week telling me that they won't be out until fall for MAG and Wasatch Front Regional Council. Other way, sorry. So we're thinking spring of next year? But that is also to be determined, and I can stay in contact with you guys and let you know where it is. So water is a driving force in nature, and it really is what drives me to keep going, waking up in the morning, and what drives all of you. I mean, you're in the water industry, you care about water, you care about the Great Salt Lake, and I just hope that we can continue to collaborate together. There's my contact information, and I know there's probably, I had another question for you guys, but I'll leave it off for now and maybe address it later. But if there are any final questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you. Question,
Leland. Not so much a question, but a comment. You know, I really do believe that it needs to have a greater amount of Great Salt Lake in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that perhaps you need to get some people who understand the lake more to help in that, how to put it in. Because you had your charts and you weren't sure where it goes. You know, currently there's a couple of paragraphs. It says, gee, we want to worry about the Great Salt Lake. But in the tie-in between water quantity to the Great Salt Lake, water quality issues, I don't see any real water quality experts on your list of advisory members either. So I'm assuming that the division helps you with that some, but I don't see it there.
Mm-hmm.
And those items need to have some outside people done. If you're going to do it all outside, well, good luck.
Oh, and I think our plan is to go to substance experts. We're not trying to draft a water quality section or, and we will look for that for sure.
You know, all water is not equal in terms of how you use it, what you do with it, and what it has to be like. So water is going to be complex, and there needs to be some of that reflected in the plan.
I just want to echo Leland's comments. I think that makes sense to have somebody on the advisory group from a technical perspective for this this group that can really give you some more detail on the Great Salt Lake. And then also on your advisory committee, the thing I would just note from a user standpoint is you've got the municipalities who are water right holders, but you don't have any private water right holders. And those are the folks when you start talking about demand, conservation, all those things that are going to be impacted. So I think it would be wise to get at least a representative from the private side. The cities are there, and that's great. They're large water right holders. But from the ag side, you've got a governmental agency person, and then you've got industrial water right holders that are going to be impacted by whatever direction you go. So.
Mr. Chairman. So are you related to Bob Hassenegger of DWR?
He is my uncle-in-law.
Okay, he's very tall.
Oh, he's very tall.
Yes, as well.
And you do need the industry on there.
Any comments or questions? Yes.
I'm still a little unclear how the state water strategy and this plan in the way they do or.
That is a great question and one that we are working on right now. So as part of trying to make the plan actionable, if you look at the water strategies, there are some that are, and I think part of the complexity that went into the water strategies is trying to get so many people to buy into them, slightly vague, like support agricultural water use. There is not, there's not an action specifically associated with that recommendation. So our initial thought is, in which we're going to take to the advisory committee, is to, we are going to do X to support that. So we'll tie an action back into the strategies. Although we won't be able to tie actions back into every strategy recommendation, that's kind of our plan.
But I'm sure you're aware of the work that we've done here on all the novel ways of getting water to the Great Salt Lake.
Yes.
Many of which tie into those strategies for conservation.
Mm-hmm.
And so interconnecting those dots is probably really important. You know, you've got everything from buying third crops in order for water to flow down the stream to forest conservation, whatever it is, all those dots are partially spelled out. And I think you can pick the one, but I think they need to be detailed enough that it's, it makes sense that people can say there is a need to pick.
And another challenge of trying to make the plan actionable is that it's, so I mean, it doesn't have to be a low-hanging fruit, but something from the division perspective we can achieve, right? We don't want to put a goal out there to meter every secondary water meter, even though we, that's what we want to happen, and that's, that is our internal goal. But as an action to that, we can say we can want to increase funding, or we want to do this, or we want to be able to give grants for secondary water meters. Some sort of act, which are still hard. Currently, we don't, through the Board of Water Resources, give grants unless it's for dam safety. I mean, so not necessarily saying that they're easy, but just that they're within our purview to do, or that we, there's some action that we can do to seek that change, whether it's trying to get legislative action and those type of things. So I appreciate that.
I mean, again, the charter is in the state water plan and the state water rights and resource plan, because that's different, because it doesn't include all the other issues. And so if you're just water rights and resources, that's a different story than if it's a state water plan trying to look at the holistic needs.
And that's our goal. I mean,
so then all these
you
other
can tell me how good we do or not.
Thank you, Candace. We appreciate your being here and informing us. For me, I wasn't aware of the existence of this prior to about a month ago, so it's been enlightening for me, and appreciate your effort. And we'll look for opportunities to provide input and feedback.
Awesome, great. So. And I will take your comments to the advisory committee and reach out to those of you who I can address comments right off.
Okay, and next item on the agenda, proposal of Great Salt Lake Advisory Council sponsorship of two GSO studies and papers. Marcel Shoup of Audubon is going to present this. Let me give just a brief introduction. In my view, some of the most contributing and meaningful efforts of the council have been where we have taken topics about which there is information and brought it together, compiled it, and presented it in such a way that it effectively informed the debate. And without actively advocating, we've had an impact of advocating those interests. And I'm referring to, of course, to the economic benefits study that was published about 6 years ago. The Lake Health study and report was published in a similar time frame. We published two different research data priority lists, I think, that have helped to positively impact research dollars. So it's the kind of thing we've done effectively. At our last meeting, we had a conversation about how our economic benefit report didn't cover costs of a drying lake, and about how there's a lot of discussion about other drying lakes around the world, but no compilation or report that could be used in this public dialogue. And so we invited Marcel, who had been working on proposals for exactly those two things, to make a presentation and a proposal. In summary, we're looking to determine, she's asking whether the council would like to put our name on these reports, as we did the economic benefit report and the Lake Health report. And so we'll ask her to present those, and then we'll talk about whether we want to do that. Marcel, and this was emailed to you, I think late last week. I do have some more copies of the proposal I'll hand around.
Mr. Chair. Could I just mention, since we're entering this topic, there was a really fun and interesting op-ed by a BYU student on this topic that appeared in Deseret News. And it's probably fun. I mean, Marcel's going to go in much more detail, but to pass this out, this kind of frames the issue from a student at BYU who's asking these questions. So, sorry, Marcel.
Hey, Marcel, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Am I still the 7 minutes? In which case, I won't go into as much detail as Dave was thinking, but I'm happy to answer some questions.
We've got 15 minutes on the agenda for you. We won't show you, but you got to leave some of that for discussion.
That's what I want to do. So I took one of my slides out to get into the detail of some of the other lakes. But anyway, so thanks very much, Don, for letting me come to the council today to talk to you about these two reports we'd like the council. I'd like to request the council to commission. And before I go into what those reports are, I just want to step back a little bit and probably say the obvious, but and repeat a little bit of what Don has said. But you know, I think we all recognize that the water levels of Great Salt Lake and the wetlands fluctuate naturally over time and over history, and particularly from year to year and even seasonally. But the intensity with which the development pressures around water use for the watersheds that serve Great Salt Lake, changes to climate, our current weather patterns, are really, I think, driving changes that have raised a lot of concern and intensity around this discussion. And we know that probably if the lake gets too low and for too long, it can't support those services and resources that the lake provides for. And there are a lot of dialogues going on, including the work that the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council has been doing around trying to identify ways to get water to Great Salt Lake. And we don't really have the solutions yet, or all of the solutions, and it's probably not a silver bullet. But I think maybe one of the reasons, in addition to the fact that it's so complex with so many watersheds and the issues are challenging, is that maybe people don't have quite enough information in a form that's usable that helps them really truly appreciate what the consequences could look like, and how serious those consequences could be. And so hopefully by commissioning two reports, one of which would just be a short survey of other drying lakes to illustrate consequences for those lake communities, and the second report, a study assessing the cost of the declining water levels of Great Salt Lake and its wetlands, will help us inform and foster just what we need, that proactive planning and decisions and actions now, rather than waiting until the crisis becomes so hard that the actions that we have to take mean that there are even harder choices to make than there are now. So I think many of you have heard Representative Hawk's presentation, where he sometimes talks about some of the other drying lakes in the world, like Owens Lake, where the City of Los Angeles Water Department essentially dried up the lake in the 20s and then was ordered under an air quality order to actually mitigate dust from Owens Lake at a cost to date of about $2.1 billion. And that's just for dust mitigation and some habitat restoration, but some successful habitat restoration. And they're expected to spend $3.6 billion by 2025 just to manage that restoration. Wayne Wurtzbach, in his papers, if any of you have read those, has talked about Lake Urmia, the Aral Sea, and others, including Great Salt Lake, and the social and economic consequences and the costs as well. We're working, Audubon is working at Salton Sea in California, where the current estimated cost just to do a 10-year phase plan to address 30,000 acres for dust mitigation, habitat restoration, will be about $417 million just in capital costs, and another 417 million, I just want to make sure. To do a 10-year phase plan, so $500 million. And the manager for the state that's working on that project has been quoted as saying that he thinks that ultimately addressing the problem will be at least a $1 billion fix. So without going into great detail, I think what we want is a short survey in a succinct way addressing a number of these lakes, maybe not all of them. There are too many, unfortunately, across the world facing this situation, but in a format that we all can use to talk to legislators, policymakers, our neighbors about what serious consequences of these drying lake systems are. The second report would be a report assessing the economic, social, and environmental costs of a drying lake system. And what we're really thinking is that kind of information can help inform water and planning, land planning decisions and their processes. It provides a way for those planning processes to consider costs and trade-offs of actions that will impact flows to Great Salt Lake. And hopefully with that kind of information, or at least even thinking that we need to make sure that our decisions take that into account, we can consider what those efforts would be that would avoid or mitigate negative impacts. So in thinking about what this study is and what this study is not, first let me clarify that this is not about redoing or reassessing the 2012 bioeconomics study. It's not necessary. That information would be used in the study, but we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Secondly, it's not about going out and doing new economic studies or surveys. It's about taking the information that's available, building a credible report based on sound science, clear assumptions, and it will probably involve a multidisciplinary effort. The types of economic costs that could be potentially covered in this type of a study could range from what are the increased costs associated with healthcare from air quality issues, the loss of hydrologic contributions, so lake effect or dust on snow, to the extent those can be quantified, impacts to agricultural productivity from dust or other potential issues, impacts to homeowners or businesses in the vicinity of Great Salt Lake, airport, the international airport, for example. And if there are, if part of those impacts are property value decreases, and how does that affect property revenues? So really bringing this around to see what the economic consequences are. But in some cases, we can't always talk about the, in some cases it'll be hard to quantify everything, so in, the report may provide also a qualitative analysis. In trying to figure out what might make this report valuable, I did have a discussion with several economists and also talked to Phil Dean, who's the director of budget and the chief economist at the state. He's also the chair of the Executive Water Finance Board. And while we didn't go into great detail about what the study would look like necessarily, he did indicate and said I could share this, that he felt that that he was supportive of the concept of this kind of study. Other situations have come up where they've looked at big projects and the question of what kinds of unseen costs are there. And a question of, are the benefits and burdens shared equally? So essentially, we're looking at a suggested timeline to do the first survey report. Again, this should be fairly straightforward based on a literature review, a few phone calls maybe. Hopefully we can have that by December of 2018. And then the assessment of potential costs, it will probably be at least a year out, although it'd be great if it could be done in time to inform the state water planning a little bit. But that's what we think it might take. And Don asked for funding. We're still trying to assess just how much it will take to do both of these studies, have some indications from talking with economists. And to date, we've managed to pull together commitments for just under half of what we think it will take to do that study. Still need to find some additional financing. Have talked to several other organizations who have not committed yet, but the council's decision might make a difference in whether those other organizations also are willing to commit some funding. So with that, I am just gonna stop so that you have time to talk, but really, from our opinion, this is sort of flipping Warren Peterson's slide on its head when he talked about if Great Salt Lake is in peril, Utah's in peril. Well, if we can plan for the future of Great Salt Lake, then we'll plan for the future of Utah as well. Thank you.
So happy to answer questions. Dave, Leland?
I applaud the effort. I think it's really important to try and do this. Because so many of these impacts you list on here are driven by the air deposition and the pickup of dust and everything, I'm only nervous insofar that you're going to have to make a lot of assumptions because there haven't been good studies, to the best of my knowledge, that actually tell us how much that could occur. that would be over and above where we're at today. So how do you broach, that's the question, is how do you broach that divide of knowledge versus what the assumptions are that you may have to make in order to save the impact?
It's a really good question, and we've talked about that, that in some cases, you can't necessarily know exactly how much dust is going to come off Great Salt Lake versus what comes off the West Desert, and then how do you apply that? But I think it may end up requiring a look at the studies that have been done, other information that exists for some of the other lakes, and making some assumptions with a range. At the end of the day, the economists at this point in time may not be able to say it's going to be exactly this. They could be able to say, you know, with, you know, if these conditions exist, this is the kind of costs you could see as an increase in health. So it's maybe how the information is framed. And so I don't think we know how much dust could come off the lake when it's dry. I just know that even out at our sanctuary, we can watch the dust come off the lake. Sometimes it's from the West Desert, but sometimes it's from the lake. And so it's not that it doesn't exist, it's quantifying it.
No, yeah, I know that. I know it exists. I know that from the average individual standpoint, they don't see it as an issue. I've been in meetings where we've asked about it, and many people say, oh, there's no dust coming off the lake. And so you don't see like you do in Texas and Arizona, New Mexico, where you see these massive dust storms rise up and sweep across the landscape. And so I just think that you need to find a way to make sure you broach that, not making it sound like you're an alarmist, but here's some good facts to it.
Right, because the one thing that's really important is this report has to be credible or it does more damage than good. And right. So that's a really important point, and I think it will be part of the discussion with the proponents or whoever submits proposals as to how best to do that. And if at the end of the day it's not something that can really be done in a credible way, then I don't think it should be in there. But that would be my opinion, not I'm not running the study, so.
Okay, Dave and then Dan, or Dan and Dave, you guys decide your order.
I think it depends on whether or not that comes from Sharon. Is that where you live? If you live in Magna, you can tell where it comes from. If you live up here, you can tell where it's from. It's off the lake bed. I flew in from out of town one time. The guy sitting next to me looked out the window and he said, what's that? I said, that's the lake bed coming up to meet us. You could have filmed a mummy in that. So I don't think it's that hard to really realize what's happening. So I think if we can find a way, we need to support this however we can.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, just building on Dan's comments, actually a couple of comments and one question. First, Marcel, thank you for all the thinking you've done on this study. Some of you are aware it's been several months in preparation
for
this presentation. I think it's so important, and I like what Don said. It's a great sequel to the economic study. That was several years ago now, and this things have changed. Drought's worse. These issues changed a little bit, and this will be, I think, a seminal. Both of them will be useful to call attention to the lake for the economy as a whole, and just help get the word out about the need to take measures. Preventive measures to prevent drying from happening. So we're all for it, and we'll support it as we can. The question is, in terms of the RFP process and who you might have in mind for writing these studies, would this be run through Jody's shop or through Brian's shop or to be determined? Or
yeah, let me answer that one. I think it depends upon who's funding it. The process will dictate.
Okay.
We'll dictate that, so we'll make sure we comply with whatever we have to comply with. Other comments or questions?
I just became aware of a study that BYU was doing in the Department of Geology, studying the isotope and looking at unique tracers. Is that?
Oh, that was Dr. Carly.
Yes. So, studies are starting.
That was funded by you guys.
It was a tech team grant.
But it's not a very comprehensive study.
No, I think it's can't remember if that one was a two-year one as well, or if that was just a one-year one.
It just doesn't have, I mean, it's not enough money to put into it.
Exactly,
to
yeah.
But it'll develop a procedure which allows to look at where the best is coming.
Is that the one that's kind of
other questions or comments?
You know, it's what I brought up before. When the lake gets down to very low levels, and not much lower than it is right now, in 1963, the lake saturated and laid down salt, and there was no dust coming off the lake then. Because it was salt encrusted. It's not there right now because we have this divided lake and we've got higher concentration on the north than on the south. If it became a real problem, you open up your bridge a little bigger, you bring more water back, and you'll solve the dust problem.
Any other comments or questions?
I have one.
Sorry, behind you. That's okay. I have to channel you. I feel a wind from the arm.
I got your back, Don. And not to debate the issue, but I think, I mean, a drying lake definitely is something that we're talking about, but, you know, if and when, all of the other things take the hit as well. So the dust is one factor that we're focusing on, but the brine shrimp then.
Well, yeah, you're collapsing the food chain then.
Yeah,
and you can go the other way too. You know, what happens when the lake gets up to 4212? That wasn't very fun.
But at least there's a plan in place for that, right?
Other questions or comments? So we've had a proposal. I would suggest that we defer our decision on this until we get to our discussion and action. Because I think there's more to be added. That's okay.
Just so you think that Audubon could not leave the room with a presentation without her on it, I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you, Marcel. Great work. Appreciate it. Next item on the agenda. Let's see it. Oh, we're running late. Options for allocation of appropriation for the Great Salt Lake. At our last meeting, we had a brief discussion about the results of the recent legislative session where House Bill 274 diverted $125,000 from the brine shrimp royalty into the Salt and Restricted Fund. And I'll read the language from the statute about how it's to be used. The division shall use the amount deposited into the account under subsection 2D, so that's the deposit of the 125, for the Great Salt Lake, as directed by the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council. It gives us some fairly broad degree of latitude, I think, for the Great Salt Lake. It does make a reference to the statutory section regarding management of sovereign lands, and I've read through that and believe it's equally as broad for the possible uses. So at the last meeting, we had an initial discussion about this, and you asked that, or I proposed that before this meeting, that I try to visit with some of you and get some input as to how you want to use that money. I apologize, I didn't get to everyone, but I got to a good number of people. And then to provide some kind of a summary and recommendation, if you will. So I have handed these out earlier.
Don, could you repeat what the House bill was?
HB 274. I don't think I got enough copies for everybody in the room, but it's a draft anyway. It represents nothing formal. So when I decided to try to come up with a recommendation about how we should spend that money, I thought I first needed to have some principles to direct that thought. And I present them today. You can add to them, subtract to them, ignore them, whatever. But here are the broad principles that I have for consideration. I will note the $125,000 is an ongoing appropriation until we do something that so alienates the legislature that they come out and take it away. So, principle number one, limit long-term commitments. I'd rather not tie up the entire amount for multiple years if possible. I think it gives us an opportunity to, or I think it would limit future discretion if we were to do that. Now there may be some compelling reason to do that, but in general we ought to limit long-term commitments. Secondly, I think we ought to spread it around to maximize impact and also to build support. I think we ought to look at leveraging other opportunities to try to get a bigger bang for the buck. We ought to focus on what our strengths are. I mean, we have limitations as an advisory council as what we can and can't do. We have a fairly diverse group of members who come from different places on different issues. So we ought to focus on what we've done, which has informed the debate. I think that has been the strength of the council. We ought to try to add value, not heat, to the discussion. We want to avoid becoming a target, because credibility of what we say is important. And we need to let others kind of stake out the end boundaries of the debate and let us try to inform the debate. We should produce credible results with those funds. I think we should be open to considering some compelling exceptions to these principles, but those would be the principles that will at least guide me in trying to decide how to allocate the money. Now, what kind of things could we spend the money on? I heard from a number of you about the idea of hiring a staff person for the advisory council. I heard from several of the others who absolutely did not want to do that for a variety of reasons. They were fairly strongly held opinions. In my view, it would be a significant decision to hire a staff person, because it would eat out virtually all the money virtually every year. So it would be one thing, one time, one decision, and would be kind of locked into it for a long time, and it flies in the face of a lot of the other expenditures. I think what I'd prefer doing and what I'd recommend doing is that we make one final run at the legislature to get a Great Salt Lake person in the Department of Natural Resources. That person could staff not only the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council, but the Salinity Advisory Council, the Great Salt Lake Technical Team, implementation of the Great Salt Lake Management Plan, and other Great Salt Lake related projects that presently may or may not be advancing. And I, as you know, 4 or 5 years ago, as a council, we actually adopted a recommendation to have a full-time GSL staff person at DNR, and that recommendation was written up. I'm not sure who wrote it up, but it was under your tenure, and presented to the Department of Natural Resources, and never made it into the DNR budget. I think that sense may still be prevalent at DNR, but I think there's an opportunity to either work with them or not and solve this problem by getting an FTE funded for the Great Salt Lake. And that would avoid us having to make a commitment. If we make that one last attempt and fail, then perhaps we can come back and talk about partnering with Forestry Fire, them putting in some money, us putting in some money to achieve that objective. So that's staffing is one area. Sponsoring reports and studies, like the economic benefit report, the health report, the two we heard about today. There are a lot of different topics. I think there's lacking a summary report on avian impacts of the low lake level, a summary report on reuse impacts on the lake. And I think we could come up with a number of different types of reports, not basic core research, but more compilation, summary report study, to help inform the debate in a variety of ways. And those aren't overly expensive to do and can have a significant impact. We could actually go farther and sponsor or try to leverage the sponsorship of scientific research. There are a lot of topics on our list of priorities that have not been thoroughly addressed, and some of them not even addressed a little bit. Leland referred to atmospheric deposition and volatilization. Nutrient balance and cycling is a huge, huge issue, and one that some people have started on, but there is a significant amount to be done, and we could use some of this funding to leverage that. And until we answer those questions, there are a lot of other issues related to Great Salt Lake that are pretty much on hold. I think another, and I won't go through any more research ideas, but every one of you probably have a half dozen in your talk that you could talk about. We could spend some money to try to implement our Water for GSL strategies. I note that number one priority and number three priority on our strategies were to figure out how to shepherd water to the lake. Most people I talk to tell me that involves some changes to the law. And perhaps we could spend some money to evaluate what those changes would be and how difficult they might be to, most people say they're probably impossible to overcome. And the guy to the right of me is going to hit me in the side of the head here if I can
see him. He's but, making a funny ear.
But at least.
It's a long conversation.
Yeah, it is. Exploring, implementing some of those strategies, whether they're difficult ones or not so difficult ones, I think that might be a possibility. We have expressed strong support for the IWRM or G-SLIM, depending on what you like to call her. And we could spend some more money. I think the most interesting way to spend money on that vehicle would be to run scenarios. Now, whether or not it's in condition to run those scenarios yet, I'm not sure, I'll go over to Greg. But I think it would be useful to run some scenarios involving the Great Salt Lake. I think they could be done at not too much cost, right, Dad? Okay, we've got them on the record. I think there's some other things we could spend a little bit of money here and there on, for example, on data gathering equipment. I note that the USGS's ESP is no longer, or no, what's the device that's no longer made?
Well, it's the Lake ESP, but it's just out for repair right now. Yeah.
So. But there may be relatively inexpensive pieces of equipment that are not included in anybody's budget that would materially benefit the data gathering process on the lake. There are projects around the lake to improve the lake. We could consider some, and obviously it's a drop in the bucket of what needs to be done, but revegetation kinds of projects, improvements to Antelope Island State Park, improve the visitor experience there. Those kinds of projects that might surface. And then last but not least, I've listed education and publicity. Whether it's tours for government officials or decision makers or publications or press releases or students or whatever, I think any of those fall within the category and might be valid. That being said, I have a personal recommendation about what we ought to do with this year's money. And I'll put that on the table before we open this up for discussion. I think today we should approve $20,000 for the Audubon proposals. I think that would represent probably about a third to a fourth of the cost of those proposals and would help get them done. In the time frame she's laid out there. I know she's raising money and has had some success, but I think we could help get that done. I think we ought to not commit any other money today, but we ought to consider setting aside without a formal commitment, which means we can come back and do something different with it. But an additional $20,000 for additional reports, like the kinds of reports we're talking about. And I would recommend we set up a subcommittee to solicit screen those kinds of reports and bring them back. Try to stir some of those up. And I know that Tom Ward's been very interested in these kinds of activities and spent a fair amount of time. I haven't talked in advance, but I'd recommend we appoint him as a subcommittee chair and then get two other members to help work on this. This
See process. What happens when he's not here?
Yeah.
He's on the phone.
I would suggest we set aside about $50,000 for scientific research focused on nutrients and establish a subcommittee. And I'd recommend Leland be the subcommittee of that chair, get two other people to work with him to screen those kinds of options and bring back and make a recommendation about how we could do that kind of research and leverage a lot more research as a result of that. And then I'd recommend we hold back $35,000 just for consideration of future meetings. And give you the opportunity to go forward and think about it and decide how what we ought to do. And I'm talking about just the first year's allocation. We're in the fiscal year. We ought to start thinking about it. We don't want it to lapse. So that's my summary and my recommendation. I throw it out on the table for a conversation about what you want to do. Dan, Vince, Jeff.
I think thanks, Mr. Chairman. Your number eight issue, education, publicity. I think we should do some of that this year before the final elections and take people out and show them the right. That might be beneficial to candidates.
Okay.
Just a question.
Was there any restrictions in 274 about the spending on this? I mean, if there were a project or something that came up that maybe had a bigger figure on it, $150,000, $200,000, does it allow carryover so that you could do a bigger project maybe every 2 to 5 years?
I think we have to do it on an annual basis, but I think we can do that. I mean, I think we can figure out a procedure to get that done. We can commit ourselves to re-upping, if you will.
I think we got to be a little bit careful in that, and the reason I like number one is that this is an ongoing appropriation, but all ongoing appropriations are subject to theft, if you will. And so there could be another department, another legislator who says, well, why did we move that money over there? Let's pull it back. And so I think there's some caution in doing some things that we can keep our arms around, that we don't get, you know, into a position where we allocated $125 for next year and all of a sudden we don't have it. We have half a study or something.
Thanks, Tom. Dave, you stick over here to apologize.
Question. Carl is next.
Well, this is just more a practical question because I don't know how state procurement goes. But can we give $20,000 to an NGO? Do we have to go through a procurement process for that? How does?
I don't think we can give $20,000 to an NGO. I think we have to be part of the process. But, you know, we've done these kinds of things in the past with other people's money that went through a procurement process. TNC okay. put up $25,000 for the economic study.
I just know my world, and I didn't wonder.
If this comes through Forestry for NC Lands, we have to put a project up to bid and do an RFP and all that jazz, which takes a considerable amount of time. So we want to keep that in mind if we're, you know, for this water study.
So would we actually be the issuer of the request for the study?
No, we wouldn't. The state would be.
Oh, I meant, that's what I meant.
But I think we would dictate the parameters of the study and what would learn why.
Yeah. I think it's great. Just wondered about the mechanics.
Good question, Dave.
I wanted to, maybe this is covered last meeting, but first thank Don for making these funds possible. You're aware that 274 is basically a reallocation of royalties from Reinschnapp that used to go to the Endangered Species Mitigation Fund. So Don stepped up and said, let's use some of this for the lake. We hope he doesn't go too far on this because the Endangered Species Mitigation Fund is actually good for a lot of things.
It's a surplus.
But I think it's terrific, of course, fully supported. And I think it's a great example of how maybe other industries can be interested in how their royalties are spent, as we've talked before. And so maybe helping Brian and other things like that. So that's just kind of an editorial comment. As far as, I like the principles very much, and the categories, and I just, you know, the direction here is to approve the 20, and then the other funds coming in reserve. I'd like to suggest we go 25 or 30 for Audubon studies, as I think they need it, and a little extra money go a long way, so. And then as far as Dan's idea, I support that as well. I'm not sure if that needs an allocation. I mean, maybe $1,000 for sandwiches, but.
Yeah. Most of it will probably go through the Forestry Fire State Lands and let them invite them, and then we'll just go away. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying we need to buy everybody everything, but it's better to have people when they're not elected be part of an issue. It works.
I love the idea. I'm wondering, can you do that as a division? Can you receive funds from the legislature?
To take the legislature
take
out
the
on the date?
The legislators out and what can be construed as lobbying? I'm just wondering, agencies can't lobby. I'm just trying to think through, because I love it. There may not be a huge amount of money, but we also want to put a burden on your budget to say, hey, we want to get legislators out there, figure out how to do it in your budget. You know.
We do it all the time. I mean, it's important.
You lobby all the time.
We.
Oh, yeah.
Did you leave the room?
Yeah.
That's totally appropriate.
Yeah, okay.
Getting folks out to understand the issues. Yeah.
And I think Dan's point, if I'm understanding, is just we don't want to put a burden on the division, but there's a great opportunity with some big turnover in the House and Senate of legislators who don't know anything about the lake at all, have never been on it. We don't want to take them to prime mosquito or you know, fly season, but you know, prime fly season. But you know.
Well, let's go back to Dan and Jeff. I haven't forgotten you.
The truth is, we've done it before. We've taken people out to the ponds, we've done stuff. As long as somebody's got Avon skin so soft, you're okay for the gnats. Fuck up, little campaign.
Oh, I've been bit before.
Does yeah, that work for the gnats?
Hey, Don, will you help me understand what the $50,000 for the Mediterranean study, what's your thinking about that and what does that entail?
Well, my thought was this, that there's a lot of research that needs to be done still on the lake to identify that. And that's an appropriate venue for these funds. In my conversations with the legislators, that came up. And so I know that they view that as a legitimate use of the funds. And so what I thought was if we had a subcommittee, they could go out and evaluate where we might be able to use roughly that amount of money to leverage some greater research on those topics. And if you go to our Great Salt Lake Research Topics database, one of the top priorities was investigation of the nutrient balance of GSL, including loading, atmospheric and groundwater input, internal cycling, legacy nutrients, and prioritization of sources. So there's six projects right there, and that need to be done.
What's the funding estimate, though, for that?
Well, it's probably millions of dollars. But the idea here, we don't have millions of dollars, so we can say, well, we don't have enough, so let's do nothing. Or we have some, let's try and leverage some other. And it is a significant topic for the beneficial use of the birds, et cetera.
Can I provide information to
Jeff? Were you down there?
Yeah, no. I think there's a lot going on with DWQ. I just wonder if the wisdom in doing this in isolation outside of the efforts.
I think it would be fair for the subcommittee to come back and say, let's pool with DWQ and POTWs and anyone else who's interested in trying to leverage and get that done. I think, but I don't think we should say, well, that's their responsibility, let's wait until they do it, because it needs to be done, and a lot of it's not being done yet.
Well, that's what I wanted to add.
Well, that's not a criticism.
No, I know.
I don't have a blank check, Jody.
No. But I did want to say that, so we have a Great Salt Lake Water Quality Strategy that was finalized in 2014, and one of the components is a nutrient assessment plan. And we're doing all the compilation of information to get ready for that next initiative. And so that's gonna come up soon. And so this would dovetail nicely into that. And I'd like Jake to present, he's done a 5-year update on the strategy elements, like developing numeric criteria through toxicity assays, our monitoring plan, and then our plans for wetlands. So he'll give an update to the council, and then just so you know, the nutrient part is coming. It's our goal is to start in 2019. So the information will be good for that initiative.
Okay, yeah. Corey.
Yeah, I would just add on to what Jody had to say there is that we've had this long-term basic data collection going on Great Salt Lake for a significant amount of time now, and that's going to continue into the future. And so we've got a good data set available to us for going in and doing some of these nutrient studies. And through the Great Salt Lake Ecosystem Program, our work plan for this next year, the USGS in cooperation with the Ecosystem Program, is going to be doing a nutrient cycling study. Dave Nafs is actually going to be authoring that one.
And Jake is working with Dave.
That's right. Jake is working with Dave, yeah.
And they're comparing the information. And I think as of now, they have a good understanding of the nutrient pools per bay. So there is work going on. That's right. What I said.
Other comments or questions?
Yeah. just to throw out the idea of, in the interest of supporting, informing the debate, as the advisory council does, and also possibly part of the Water for Great Salt Lake strategies, I think it would be useful for the council to consider perhaps looking into commissioning a study on water reuse. There's a lot of debate that goes on about that issue. It's very complex. We all know that reuse means, you know, the possibility of less water getting into the lake. But how does it actually translate into the economics and the potential impacts for the system? So it's just an idea to consider for a potential study.
So I would endorse that as well. And I'm thinking, would that go under additional reports that we undermined on as far as?
I think it depends on the scope of what you're trying to do. It could be additionally reported if you're using existing data and trying to summarize. It could be fall under research. More likely additional reports, I would think. The way you and she and Lynn have described it.
Of course, Leland's the go-to person on this topic.
And reuse is moving more quickly than we thought it would. So, very good time. Maybe I'm comfortable with this. Other thoughts?
Maybe just one to add on to Dave's comment there, that I think it's important that we remember that the $125,000 appropriated comes from a royalty from the lake, and I think you've done a good job here, Don, in talking about possible expenditures, that it behooves us to make sure that that money, it's a fee that industry has paid. Let's put it back into ensuring the health of the lake and the future economic growth and overall health of the lake. And I think that's, as long as we can do that, I think we can demonstrate to the legislature that this is a good use of those funds. If we get away from that in any regard, that's when we'll be fighting a legislator who sees a better use of these funds. But at least our organization for years and years has been supportive of fees that are fees and royalty is a fee that is assessed to industry so long as it can be utilized in the area in which it was gathered. And this is a good example of taking those fees and putting them back into the overall health and economic development of the lake. So I think we've done a good job of talking about those things.
Well said, I agree.
So what do you want to do?
I make a motion that we broadly follow the outline that you put forth on the bottom of the page.
Second. Any debate or discussion? Amendments? Changes? They will call them.
Go ahead. I'd amend to increase the 20,000 to 25 for online.
Sounds about birds.
Are you good with that, Leland?
No, not for Dave.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
What if someone else hit that?
Yeah, let's. Jeff,
you want to amend his motion? Dan, do you agree to amend your motion to include that?
Sure.
Or your second?
Can I ask you, where did you come up with the 20 or even the 25? Is that the right number? Is it
I think the cost of the study is probably somewhere between $60,000 and $80,000 of the two studies. So it's roughly a fourth to a third of the cost.
And where does the other money come from?
And so I will just say that thanks to TNC and National Audubon, we've got 30 already, and then that would be added.
So we've still got a ways to go, but it's, you know, try to leverage it. So we have a motion and a second, which has been amended.
This one. I'm not going to be opposed. I was just going to say there are also other governmental entities that might be willing to contribute. It's probably easier for us to do some kind of interlocal with the state than to go out to a procurement process. So As some of these studies come up, there might be some willingness to participate.
Carlton has participated in the past. So.
Yeah, no, I, so I just, it'd be kind of interesting to know what those mechanics would be for once we decide on the study, because that would, you know, you could probably grease the skids a little easier.
I deferred the procedural discussion until next meeting, if that's okay.
Totally, yeah, no rush.
After we have things on the table. Other comments? So we have a motion, a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? It's unanimous. Dylan, are you willing to serve as an ad hoc subcommittee chair?
Sure.
Tom, are you? Good. Anyone like to head up the subcommittee with the $10,000 for lake related improvement projects? Everybody's heads down. I'll find somebody if that's okay. All right. Next on the agenda, public comment period. Anyone who'd like to make a public comment, raise your hand so I can see what kind of time you need. God bless you. Oh, Marcel, sorry.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to the council for agreeing to support commissioning the two studies and providing some money and agreeing to provide some funding. So. Greatly appreciated. I think it will be really important going forward.
Well, thanks for all your hard work. I know you've been working on this for months and months.
trying to tug on your
stuff. I think it sets a pattern for how people have reports they want us to consider that kind of effort should be going into development. Yes.
How are you following through on Dan's adjustment on the
education? That's a great question. I like that drop. Can we appoint Dan as the subcommittee chair to look into the options and opportunities for doing that? Would you do that, Dan?
Sure.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Great. Well, thank you. I apologize we've run a little long here. I didn't see any hands on public comment. Appreciate you all being here. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, September 12th at 10 o'clock a.m. And I think we've reserved this room again. I hope it's a good location since you work for us.
We'll have better parking.
Okay, I'll entertain any other business. We have a variety of things on our September agenda, allocation of funding.
I'd like to, the division modify the Great Salt Lake Water Quality Strategy update.
Okay. North Shore, Jeff, are they at the point where we might be able to get them to a meeting?
You know, we've made contact with them several times, and the last time they just said that they weren't interested.
Okay. Yeah. All right, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate your efforts to do that. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
There's a second. Any bigger discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Before we adjourn, I forgot one thing. At the last meeting, we had a conversation. Jeff had a suggestion, Jeff Richard, that we use the respond to the presentation on the Bear River water diversion applications by looking at a broader overall policy statement that we could maybe urge policy makers to adopt and follow. And Tom Ward agreed to undertake drafting, and Tom's not here. He's drafted something. It's gone through a lot of iterations. I think both he and Jeff have agreed there's some follow-up questions need to be answered, but I saw a draft yesterday. They don't want to release it yet, but we'll have that at a September meeting, and we'll make sure it gets circulated in May. I think they're heading in a great direction in terms of trying to get a statewide policy for the administration of water in a way that would be beneficial to the Great Salt Lake. And I think they're really sensitive to some issues that have to be addressed properly, and we'll leave it in their hands to get something for us a couple of weeks before the next meeting, if that's okay.
Yeah, we should have, it's pretty close. We should be able to circulate.
Yeah, thanks for your good work, and thanks for the idea. It's a super idea. Okay, we're turned.
Grab it.